This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this U.S. politics edition of the program.
Madam Speaker, Madam Vice President. No president has ever said those words from this podium. No president has ever said those words. And it's about time.
Those were U.S. President Joe Biden's opening words of his first address to a joint session of Congress, marking 100 days in office. Flanked by two of the most powerful women in America sitting behind him, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and Vice President Kamala Harris, President Biden spoke to a sparsely populated audience, only a fraction of the usual number of lawmakers, just 200 out of the usual mix of approximately 1,600 representatives and senators, cabinet officials, Supreme Court justices and assorted guests were present to comply with indoor spacing requirements due to COVID-19. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Speaking of COVID-19, President Biden started his speech by outlining the successes of his $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief bill. He segued into his ambitious $2.3 trillion infrastructure proposal known as the American Jobs Plan, which includes $621 billion for transportation projects, including bridges, roads, mass transit, ports, airports, and electric vehicle development.
The American Jobs Plan is a blue-collar blueprint to build America. That's what it is.
According to the New York Times, the plan would also funnel $111 billion into improving drinking water infrastructure, eliminating lead pipes, and provide billions more for expanding broadband access and upgrading electric grids so they are resilient and clean. President Biden proudly equated addressing the climate crisis with creating jobs. He went on to present the American Families Plan, a $1.8 trillion expansion of national government assistance for American children and families. As VOA's Steve Herman reports, the plan features 2 years of government-paid pre-kindergarten education for the country's youths and 2 years of free community college for young adults, all of it to be paid for with higher taxes on the country's wealthiest people and corporations. Biden includes $80 billion in enhancements to the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, which the administration estimates could raise as much as $700 billion from the richest individuals and corporations that evade taxes. In the Republican response, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, the only Black Republican in the Senate, described most of Biden's proposals as platitudes and a, quote, liberal wish list of big government waste, unquote. He said that Mr. Biden was not uniting the country as he promised, but pulling it apart. In his address, President Biden also touched upon other priorities such as police reform, gun safety legislation, immigration reform, and the urgent need to protect voting rights. Legislation which addresses all of these issues has passed the democratically controlled House of Representatives and is awaiting action in the Senate, where Democrats hold a thin majority and, in view of the filibuster, would need Republican support to pass it. We will talk with our veteran analysts about the substance and politics of passing legislation in such a closely divided Senate. Joining us, as always, via Microsoft Teams are John Fortier. He's resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. That's a conservative think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler. He's executive vice president for policy at Third Way, a center-left policy group also based here in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program. So, Jim Kessler, let me begin with you. How effective was President Biden, in your view, in selling his agenda?
Well, he had a very good first 100 days, and he had a very good night, you know, in his address to the joint members of Congress. If you look at the polls for, you know, the people who watched this speech, overwhelmingly high marks across the ideological spectrum. I think there's an underestimation of Joe Biden as a communicator that began when he announced for president in 2020 in Philadelphia and gave a speech and was basically dismissed as someone who was going to be a has-been. Well, that has-been romped to the Democratic nomination and then had a pretty decisive victory over Donald Trump and has had a very strong first 100 days. The next 100 days are going to be tough. I mean, this is the rubber's going to meet the road. Joe Biden is calling for some major spending items that, in my view, the country needs, desperately needs, and wants to remake this economy for the future, more climate resilient, more resilient to recessions, and also wants to strengthen and modernize the safety net for American, you know, working and middle class folks. But that also includes raising taxes and raising taxes on wealthy people by quite a bit, and also an increase in corporate taxation. And with the narrow majorities that he has in the Senate, it's going to be a high wire act all the way to the finish. But they have to be very happy with their opening play this week.
So, John Fortier, a high wire act to the finish, as Jim Kessler said. President Biden is proposing more than $6 trillion in new spending. That's probably not going to go down too well with Republicans. Did you hear anything that would convince enough Republicans, especially in the Senate, to get on board and pass any of the legislation that he's proposing, particularly the infrastructure bill?
Well, I agree with Jim, broadly speaking, about Biden as a communicator. I think he's underestimated. And the one reason I would say that is Biden is in both an enviable but a difficult position in that he's got majorities and he's got an enthusiastic Democratic base. That base, much of it wants to do some really progressive things. Some ways Biden is seen as a little more moderate, a little older school, maybe a little dull, not as inspiring as some. But that fits with what he's trying to do, which is move that agenda along a fair amount, but sort of hold together his coalition. I don't think it's really realistic that he's going to reach out and find much support on the Republican side. And you can blame that on Republicans. You can blame that on the agenda. I think it's probably some of both. But I do think that there are challenges ahead, as Jim said. I mean, the one other smart thing I think the Biden administration has done is there's all this on the agenda. And that the normal worry for a new majority is that people overreach and you can't meet them and your base starts to get unhappy with you. Because we are using this sort of insider tool of reconciliation where we can get things through the Senate on a limited number of ways, on a majority vote, and the type of things you can get through are spending type things. That has gotten Joe Biden focused on things that are maybe somewhat more doable. They can also be symbolic towards his ends. But the very controversial things, immigration and voting rights and other things, which would require either getting rid of the filibuster or getting, you know, a lot of Republican support, are much harder to do. So I think that has been a smart strategy. Going ahead, though, the majorities are still incredibly narrow, especially in the Senate. And I do think he's going to get something of a package that he wants, but it will likely be scaled back in a number of ways. There are a lot of Democratic voices who want different things. The tax increases are part of that opposition. But I think the Republicans, I thought Tim Scott's response was quite effective, but it is likely that it's a lot of what we've gotten to a certain point will say, maybe we're spending too much. Maybe we're doing too much. I still think that's a better place for Biden to be than pushing things that are much more culturally hot button than the idea of spending too much.
So, Jim Kessler, picking up on what Senator Tim Scott said, you know, he was quite critical of President Biden. He dismissed his proposals, particularly infrastructure, you know, as some sort of a liberal wish list. He even said something that maybe some Republican voters would disagree with. He felt he was divisive. President Biden always likes to make the distinction between Republican voters, some of whom he thinks actually like him and like his policies, particularly the COVID relief bill, maybe parts of the infrastructure bill. Do you see a divide between lawmakers, the Republican lawmakers and Republican voters? And if so, on legislation, will the lawmakers follow their leadership sort of to push back, or the voters?
Republicans have a playbook when a Democrat becomes president that they ushered in the 1990s with Bill Clinton, used it again with Barack Obama, and are trying to use it again right now with Joe Biden, which is on the congressional level, do not cooperate at all with the incoming Democratic president on anything having to do with economics and try and force that president to go farther to the left, either to bring down the entire package or to create some distance between that package and the wishes of the mainstream of the American people. So that's what they're doing right now. And I agree with John. I don't think it's a vote-rich environment in Congress among Republicans for Joe Biden for his major economic pieces. But there's something different that Joe Biden has that's an advantage, particularly over Barack Obama and also to a certain extent Bill Clinton. Each of the other former Democratic presidents, when they came into office, needed to do things to rescue the economy that the American people hated. So Barack Obama, for example, he had to bail out the banks and it was necessary, but people hated it. So his first package expended a lot of political capital. Joe Biden, his first package, people loved it. It was giving people checks. It was giving people vaccinations. It was helping small business. So he has gained capital over the first 100 days, whereas Obama and Clinton were losing capital. That's going to be an advantage for Biden going forward as he tries to pass his package with these narrow majorities. On the other hot button issues that John talked about, immigration, guns, crime, some of the other racial justice issues, if there's going to be progress, that progress is going to have to be bipartisan. Those are all difficult tasks. I wouldn't put them in the impossible category, but they range from slim to a reasonable chance of getting done on each one of those things in a bipartisan basis.
Turning back to you, John Fortier, to react to what Jim Kessler just said. This is sort of a Republican playbook, the fact that Senator Tim Scott was quite critical of President Biden. But do you see something maybe different with Biden, as Jim articulated, that, you know, he has some capital left?
Well, I wouldn't say that everything is popular for everyone, but I do think that Jim's point is right in the sense that the very unpopular things, at least in the first package, weren't there. Biden didn't have to do that. Republicans disagreed with a lot of it. They voted against it. But again, it wasn't as unpopular as some of the really cultural differences that they have. You know, this package now before the American people, I think, is going to get more traditional Republican criticism about higher taxes. Yes, aimed more at the rich, or at least the way it's described. But, you know, I think higher taxes and a lot more spending on top of other spending. And so I think there'll be more pushback there. But again, I do think, because again, this is essentially a spending bill, which will have some aspects of infrastructure, there's a lot of room to compromise and negotiate down if need be. So I expect Democrats will pass a package. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. I think we're going to go back to a more typical legislative process. That's partly because of differences on the Democratic side and various negotiations. So I think we're going to spend some of the summer doing that. You know, and I think that begins to look like more normal politics as we go forward, a slow legislative process. And then if that gets done, other things which are much harder to do, and really the path isn't there, and the base may be, very unhappy. And Republicans, naturally, the out party goes back to their base. And even people who may not have loved Donald Trump or might have thought Joe Biden was okay in certain ways, as Republicans are going to see some issues that they really don't disagree with. So I'm not predicting that Joe Biden will become an unpopular president. I think that depends a lot on the economy and what happens in the next couple of years. But I think the slog will begin and it will return to a little bit more of typical politics. Whereas at the beginning, with a sort of mandate of sorts and spending programs and the ability of coming in as the coronavirus is, at least we're improving in that direction, has all been very good for him. I think it's going to be tougher sledding ahead.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, from whom you just heard, and Jim Kessler, Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way, and they join me via Microsoft Teams. We are discussing the politics of passing President Biden's ambitious legislative agenda as he marks 100 days in office. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Abdelkarim Boragua from Saleh, Morocco. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our political gurus. Back to you, Jim Kessler. Looking at this infrastructure package, do you see a way of getting it passed with Republican support? Or do you think that Democrats will have to use that parliamentary maneuver that you referenced earlier, budget reconciliation, where you pass it with the majority? How do you see that? Because that may be problematic with Democratic Senator Joe Manchin. How do you see this playing out?
Just the reality is, even if you use budget reconciliation as a process, and that is a process in which you only need 50 votes, not 60 votes, to pass something in the Senate, that doesn't preclude the bill from being bipartisan. In the past, there have been many reconciliation bills that have won bipartisan support. It's possible that a handful of Republicans will support an infrastructure package. And I expect that over the next month or so, we're going to be seeing some true bipartisan efforts on infrastructure. Senator Rob Portman, Republican from Ohio, said to Joe Biden, apparently in the House chamber, you know, don't count us out. Don't leave us behind. So there might be some real legitimate efforts there. The difficulty for Republicans on infrastructure is less so on the spend side, but on the pay for side. How are you going to pay for it? And Democrats, Joe Biden said, we're not going to raise taxes on anybody under $400,000. And Republicans tend to be looking, at least this group of Republicans, tends to be looking at user fees and maybe carbon taxes or gas taxes or tolls or other fees to raise some of that money. And I'm not sure the Democrats are going to go there. In the end, my prediction is this bill passes with minimal or zero Republican support.
So turning to you, John Fortier, what do you expect to happen, particularly with the infrastructure bill? Do you think, as Jim Kessler said, there might be some Republican support? Can there be some kind of agreement on how to pay for the upgrading of our infrastructure, as well as perhaps expanding education opportunities and childcare, the more expansive definition of infrastructure that President Biden is promulgating?
Look, I think the bill is going to change, and I think it could go one of two ways. I think in both cases, you know, I won't expect a lot of Republican support. But one way it might go is, and I think this would have problems on the Democratic side, that it would be scaled down a fair amount. It would focus more on infrastructure. And to the extent it spent money on childcare and other things, maybe it would be small and symbolic. And that the tax side would be shrunk and a lot smaller. I think that's probably the less likely scenario. There, I think you could get some Republican support. I think Jim is right. The somewhat fewer moderate Republicans who might support this are favoring other types of taxes, which, frankly, I think most of the Republicans won't support, and many Democrats won't either. The other way that it gets done is mostly with Democratic votes, or almost exclusively with Democratic votes. I still think that is a shrinking of the package and a changing of the tax plan to some extent. You look at Democrats, especially with the narrow majorities, coalescing around tax increases is still a difficult thing. And you see, for example, many members of the New York delegation opposing aspects of taxes related to higher income people and business investment and capital gains types things. And to hold that together, I think it's just a very tricky thing. So I expect the tax side will change some, probably come down. I think the spending side will probably come down some, and Democrats will pass it on their own terms. If they really did want to get 6 or 7 Republican votes in the Senate, I think it would have to look a lot different. It'll be a lot more bridge and road focus and a lot less on the tax side. I'm not sure even how they do the tax side. So I think the bill has a chance of getting through because they need 50 votes only through reconciliation, and they can do a spending type bill. But I think there's some pressures that will really cause it to change, even if it's just a Democratic bill. And certainly if they wanted, you know, handful of Republicans on board as well.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for what's going to happen with the infrastructure proposal. But there are a couple other things that are important to President Biden, to the Democrats, and one could argue to many other independents and maybe some Republicans. For example, Jim Kessler, Senator Tim Scott, the Republican from South Carolina, is trying to work with Democrats in the Senate to try to get this George Floyd Justice in Policing Act passed or some version of it. How optimistic are you that there may be some common ground on that issue?
I am guardedly optimistic on this. The right people in Congress are working on it. Tim Scott, a Republican senator from South Carolina, is the right choice for Republicans. Cory Booker on the Democratic side is the right choice. Joe Biden is giving them room to work things out, and my hope is that they will. Here is my concern. Conservative media in the United States, Fox News is and One America Network, they are basically saying that the grievances that African Americans have about police is really fake and misplaced. So on the conservative media side, all of the language and messaging and momentum is on do nothing, that, you know, this is not a real problem. So Republicans are going to have to overcome the media side of what their base listens to on that. And that's a hard thing to do, but my hope is that they will.
What do you say, John Fortier, with respect to getting legislation on police reform out of the Senate in a bipartisan fashion?
Well, I have to admit, I think I'm going to be the flip side of the coin of Jim Kessler on this one, in the sense that I do think that Tim Scott is a serious senator, and his speech, I think, was effective. But he's been working on this issue for a while, and I think brings some credibility on the Republican side. I guess I was going to say my worry is the Democratic media or the base or social media or whatever you want to call it, whether that represents a majority of Democrats or not. It is a very strong voice, and whether they would see some of what Scott and Republicans are proposing as just not enough. If everybody decides they want a practical win where they make some incremental progress on some police reform, there's some money put at the federal level, then I think the possibility for a deal is there. Maybe Jim is right about the Republican side, but I think the Democratic side would want a lot more and would want this, what they see as a large national movement for the last couple of years, especially to result in a bigger change and a more dramatic change. So I think that's the danger. And because of that, I guess I'm, I don't know if cautiously optimistic is probably too strong, but I do think there's some bright people there, but I do think the politics of this are very difficult.
Cal, can I just jump in on that? Because I think that's a very good point by John. And definitely the media aspects on the left will be pressing Democrats to go further. One of the reasons why I'm optimistic is the most pragmatic wing of the Democratic Party is African-American members of Congress, for the most part. Just a very pragmatic group of legislators. These were the folks that nominated Joe Biden, African-Americans, and this is real for them. So if they put their imprint on it in Congress, then the rest of sort of the Democratic media message machine is going to have to go along with it. But you're right, it's fraught on both sides.
Well, it's fraught on both sides. And we just did a program on police reform in the aftermath of the Chauvin verdict. And the bottom line is no one piece of legislation is going to be a panacea for this. There are so many other aspects. So it's one important tool, and hopefully there will be some consensus on that legislation, because there are some very important aspects, I think, that both Republicans and Democrats can agree on. But as we close, gentlemen, and let me turn back to you, Jim Kessler, what else are you looking for over the summer and pretty soon? And I think already it started the campaigning for the legislative elections. Anything else you think can be done, whether it's immigration or a piece of immigration like regularizing the Dreamers, children who came to the United States, gun safety legislation?
I know that there is real bipartisan, behind closed doors, discussions on guns. We'll see if it bears fruit. It's a very, very difficult issue for the United States Congress. It always has been. I'm skeptical, but the conversations are real. On immigration, it would be great if there was either a major immigration bill done or a moderate-sized immigration bill. That issue is just part of the poison that is going through the American political system and part of the polarization. And if we can turn the heat down, that would be terrific. I am dubious because for both parties, photo ops at the border are better politics than actually solving the problem. So I don't expect Republicans to really come to the table on this. I wish they would. This is a place where politics is moving further apart rather than closer together.
So back to you to get the last word, John Fortier.
Look, I think the two things that are helping Joe Biden the most, the economy looks like we may just come back out well out of the pandemic and start to do well. That's always good for an incumbent president. And then the coronavirus pandemic itself. At least you could say Joe Biden was fortunate to come in as we were having the vaccine to really bring down the pandemic. You know, if either of those things turns out to be worse than we expect, then I think it's pretty bad news for Democrats or any incumbent. And Joe Biden, again, I think probably could hope for good news on both fronts. But I think you see under the surface of the pandemic, lots of divisions. And if we don't open up schools in the fall, or if things take a turn for the worse, or, you know, I think some confusing or difficult messaging on masking and other things may be pleasing to Democratic voters, but it could look bad. So I think those are both the possibilities and the pitfalls for Joe Biden. I think we're going to spend the summer talking about this package. It will probably get done. And then, you know, those more difficult issues, I don't want to say that none of them can get done, but I think you're going to see a more normal pattern of a president trying to use the executive powers and the decisions of everyday governments to push forward his agenda and the other.
And on that note, that is all the time we have on this politics edition of Encounter. I would like to thank my guests, John Fortier, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, executive vice president for policy at Third Way. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.